Welcome to another episode of Conversations for Financial Professionals, where we are shaping the next generation of advice. And today we have a very special guest, Dr. Mary Carlson. So great to see you. You are a financial behavior expert and a well-known speaker and author. You have worked in both the military and government sectors for over a decade, helping improve your clients' personal finances. You founded chieffinancialmom.com, which we have to talk about, a personal finance education blog to help other busy moms. You're also the co-host of the Real Money, Real Experts podcast, fellow podcaster, and an adjunct faculty member for the financial planning programs at the University of Georgia and Texas Tech University. Go Red Raiders. You currently reside in Virginia with your husband and three daughters. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Dominique. It's so good to be with you today.
Yeah, this is great. We had a little, I guess, a social media introduction, and then we finally got hooked up. Right. By the way, how are you doing, and how's life going in the pandemic?
We're actually doing great. I teach online for both Georgia and Texas Tech, and we haven't missed a beat. So when everyone was having to change last year, and I almost hesitate saying this because there's people out there like, oh, I don't like her. But because I was already teaching online, if anything, it has helped me just continue to improve that online presence. And it's also helped me understand that in the long run, and I think with a lot of financial planners, coaches, counselors, it's just going to be more and more important that you have an online presence. If you're not already there, you need to be there. Video is where it's at. In fact, here's a funny little statistic for you, but the number one search engine I think everybody knows is Google. Do you know number two? Any YouTube. Guesses? You got it. That's because you're already there. Many people don't, you know, and that it's huge. I think many people are shocked when they hear that, but video is so important. So as a financial coach or counselor, if you're coming into this, make sure that you are upping your virtual skills, because I think we're going to be doing many more client meetings, prospecting. Everything's going to come virtually in the future.
It's interesting you say that. I think this was season two. I had Skip Swice and Patrick Mahoney on from FPA. And Patrick Mahoney was talking about the total virtual experience he had when he did his taxes on Zoom. Secure transfer of files, the whole nine. And he was just, you know, raving about the seamlessness of that process, which made me think, man, I can probably step it up on my onboarding process. So to your, you know, kudos to the insight there, because I think you raise a great point in that a lot of clients that want to consume financial services don't have in their mind that they need to sit across from a desk with you to talk about their, you know, their situation, or even have the service delivered or rendered. So great point to start this out.
Yeah. And one more thing on that is I've been to doctors. I've got three little kids, so I'm always in a doctor's office, and they're having to transition. And I feel like a lot of doctor's offices have been so accustomed to being in person, right? So this was a big transition for them. And I have noticed those forms are still reading like you were sitting there. They're asking for social security numbers, which we don't need anymore. You should not put your social security number on a document or on a doctor's visit. But there's just so many things that if you are still in that pen and paper mode, or even if you've put your old forms online, make sure you're reading through that and having someone else critique it for usability in a virtual setting. So you can't just go paperless and assume it's all the same. I would even encourage you to have an expert or someone come out from the outside, even a spouse or a friend, and say, where are the downfalls now that we're virtually doing this onboarding process versus the in-person? Because there are differences and they're important to capture.
No, you're giving a whole lot of bonus content that has like absolutely nothing to do with what I want to ask you with, but I appreciate you for it. Like, maybe I'll have to figure out to splice this up.
It's the it's the financial behavioral side of money. And this all comes into play with that.
No, it does. And I think that's a great segue. So let's talk about this. So you want to be a financial coach. There's a lot of people that come into my community. I get the privilege to sit at the seat where somebody watches a YouTube video or two, and they come into the Jumpstart community, and I ask them, so this financial planning thing, financial advising thing, Do you know what you want to do? Do you want to be a coach? Do you want to be a planner? Do you know what you want to do? And most people go, I don't really know. So maybe we can start there about the differences between the hats of financial coach and financial planner.
Oh, great start. That's a great place to begin. In fact, I teach, as I mentioned before, at master's level. Many of them have already been financial planners for years, and yet they come into this class with the exact same question. So do not feel alone in this question. I think there's many out there that do. And over the course of teaching, many of them are opening their eyes saying, I've been in the industry for 30 years and never knew about financial therapy. They've heard of coaching or they've heard of counseling, but they don't know really what that entails. So let me help you kind of understand that better and see what we're doing. So I like to talk about how we're alike in some similarities and how we're different in other ways. So at the heart of all of it, we all want to help other people. It's very nuanced in how we do it. And quite honestly, the public has no clue the difference between a coach and a counselor because we don't even know. As a profession, it's so nuanced. So keeping that in mind, I think people can call themselves whatever they want and the public's not going to know the difference. But more importantly, I think it's important for advisors or planners or whatever you call yourself if you're coming in the profession to know these differences. So with a planner, if you're looking to be a planner, you're looking for more than likely a long-term relationship, something that's going to last decades and hopefully even generations, right? You're wanting that wealth to pass from generation to generation. Many financial planners have minimums. Most of the time we're talking about higher net worth or at least a good mid-market level, but not a lot of remedial. I call it remedial. So the credit card debt, any kind of debt, credit, kind of some of those basic issues that the rest of the world deals with, but not necessarily on the high end. So financial planning is really more in that setting. And I would say one of the key components of financial planning is that it's long-term. You're really looking to establish a true relationship with that person and keep them. And you're also probably going to be serving a very limited number of clients, a few hundred people, and not thousands, because there's only so much capacity you can do as an individual planner.
And let me interject really quick as you say that, because you bring up something really key that I don't know people have maybe put this together, but you just saying this had me think about the domain of knowledge that you have to go through in the CFP curriculum and why it is so, let's call it inch deep, mile wide. Because yep. It's preparing you yep. for a long relationship where you have to go through taxes, estate, retirement income planning, education planning, fundamentals, you know, all these different things that people are going to intersect during their financial planning life, if you will. So I just want to throw that in there.
Absolutely. And I love how we always say a mile long and a foot deep because, for example, if you want a mile deep, go get a CFA. That's investment heavy, right? And so there are specializations. If you really want to come out as a specific specialization area, then that is important that you do go that mile deep. But yeah, the financial planning is very broad based. You serve a number of clients. Now let me throw in, so let's go to financial counseling next, because a lot of times in pro bono cases or working with the military or other populations, the military kind of is my background, so I'm very familiar with it. You don't get taught in the CFP board curriculum about cash flow issues or even cash flow in general. It's just assumed that whoever you're working with has a base level of cash flow and they're able to have some investments that on the side and making enough money. And really, I've had so many, I remember even working in financial planning offices and having clients that they've had for decades. Then they would come to me and say, hey, they're outspending their assets faster than we can keep up with. And they can't be our client anymore. What can you do as a financial counselor to help them? And so moving into the financial counseling realm, you tend to see a lot more of the, again, remedial issues. So they're experts in debt, in credit card, in bankruptcy, in mortgage or keeping your mortgage, right? Keeping your house. So there are all of those issues that are, I kind of say the bell curve of issues, like the 80% of the population really deals with. That's financial counseling. We see financial counseling in a lot of different areas. Everything from credit unions can have financial counselors. Military is obviously one. Government hires a lot of financial counselors. We're also seeing ones that do have private practice, but it's more like a therapist model. So there aren't assets to manage typically with a financial counseling engagement, which is another key caveat. It's more of an hourly model, kind of like you would see in a therapy situation. You could also be hired by an EAP, an employee assistance program, and go work for a corporation. There's a lot of ways you can plug in as a financial counselor, but keeping in mind, most financial counselors are paid by the company, not the individual. It's hard to run a financial counseling business where the individual is paying you when that's the problem that they're having, is they're not having enough money to pay that. So kudos.
I think that's a great, thank you for bringing that in. And just to clarify here, when you say financial counselor, is this synonymous with financial coach, or are we now going to differentiate on that too?
We're going to differentiate on that too. This is the professor in me, right? And I think you've really brought up a great point, because so many people call themselves intermittently coach or counselor, and it's hard to distinguish the two. So with financial counseling, you're typically, by the way, also looking at a very short-term relationship, something that you are helping them help themselves. And so by, 4 to 6 sessions, no longer than 8 sessions, you're usually wanting them out on their own where they're doing it on their own.
So would you say it's kind of like scenario-based, if you will, or event-based?
Yeah, I would call it more triage in a doctor-type setting. So the blood is gushing. The wound is open. You're putting that tourniquet in. You're getting the blood bleeding to stop, but you're not the orthopedic surgeon going in and doing the elaborate surgery at the end. You're just getting the blood stopped to where they're not gushing. Usually with a financial counseling setting, there's so many reasons, but because of the payment schedule, they're not really your long-term client. You don't see them for years and years to come and the other thing is you're seeing hundreds and hundreds of clients in this case, because there's so many people that need your help that most of the time financial counselors can't spend 2 and 3 years with just one client because they're having to help so many others. And it's usually dealing with the crisis at the moment for the most part.
Great point.
That's kind of a rough way to say it. Now moving into the coaching side. So many, these terms are thrown around in the industry intermittently. But I would say right now, coaching is the sexy word. No one wants to be counseled. Everyone wants a coach, because I don't need to be fixed. No one wants to go to a therapist, right? But you bet I'll hire a life coach, or you bet I'll hire a financial coach, because that's a positive aspect. It's a way to look at it. I would say, so coaching's interesting. It really has grown, especially in the last few years. And I'm not just talking about financial coaching here. I'm talking about life coaching, business coaching. Everything has grown tremendously, especially within the last decade. So financial coaching is a offshoot of this growth in coaching in general. One of the things in the past, though, is that coaches would come from any sector, meaning they could be a business coach, but also a financial coach, or they could be a life coach, but also do financial coaching. That's problematic when there isn't the substance behind it. Now, thank goodness in this day and age, we do have some great financial coaching designations. We have great programs. Sondra Davis is one who has a great financial coaching program. If you also, AFCPE has partnered with her to have a financial coaching program. So definitely, if you're interested in coaching, before just jumping in and hanging out your shingle that says, hey, I'm a financial coach, I think it's super important that you have the education needed to call yourself that. Now, are there policemen out there like we have in the investments world, or AKA regulators, I shouldn't call them policemen, but regulators in there that are saying, oh, you're not technically a coach because you don't have this education. There's not, right? It's a very different world, but you don't know what you don't know. And quite honestly, I see too many in cowboys and cowgirls in the wild, wild west of financial services that are just hanging up a shingle and saying, oh, I'm a financial coach now. That can actually be really problematic, especially when you get in the world of investments, or even, and you don't even say investments, But if you tell a client to save and you tell them to save in a money market mutual fund instead of in a savings account, you've already crossed the line and you didn't even know it. So these are important things that you're knowing. So I think that's my number one takeaway as a counselor or a coach or anything, a financial therapist. You need to know what you need to know before you go give that advice. So you need to have the education yourself before you go and talk to others about it. Even if you do a great job with your own budget, good for you, but still go and gain further knowledge to be able to kind of know where you should and shouldn't be stepping and how to help clients further. On the coaching side too, we're looking at a longer term relationship. So coaches tend not to turn over clients as quickly as financial counselors do. So we're not in that triage stage with coaching. There can still be bleeding with coaching, to keep going with that analogy, but you're really looking for someone who's going to be with you for several years. It may not be decades. It may not be generations. I'm sure Sandra would say, we hope it is, right? But at the same time, you're probably looking for someone for a relationship for several years that can help long-term. But again, you're adding that positive aspect, kind of being that accountability partner, and you're not giving the advice. So I always like to say with financial planners, it's you should do this, you should do that, right? Here's what I think, like, this is my advice to you. And it's just the opposite with coaching and counseling. You're asking the questions. So with coaching and counseling, the client is the expert, not you. And that is hard for us financial planners because we've studied so hard and we know all the answers. And yet with coaching and counseling, the client is in charge. They're the ones that are experts. And so you need to ask more questions in that engagement and relationship and give a lot less answers because the client is the one who at the end of the day is going to be able to solve their own issue.
Coaching. Now, that's probably a topic that you either know you needed or you don't. So I'm not here to tell you that you need a coach. However, what I will tell you is that as an existing financial professional, sometimes you might find yourself a little inconsistent or even frustrated when you compare your success to those of your peers. That's because you have more in you, my friend. You got more to pull out. You got some more potential. Enter the Masterclass Coaching Lab. Having consulted some of the top advisors over the past few years, including building my own wealth management firm, I know what it takes to take you and your team to the next level. So as one of my coaching clients, we're gonna have a no-fluff, customized plan to absolutely crush your goals. No BS, no fluff. Need to break away and start your own firm? Got you covered. Need to find your ideal client? Got you covered. Maybe you need help finding that ideal client or implementing some ROI producing systems and workflows. Got you covered. In either case, the Masterclass Coaching Lab is probably for you. Look, if you're serious about getting to the next level and you need some assistance, all you need to do is go to thejumpstartcoachinglab.com/masterclass and get started with your application. Let's get back to that episode. Most financial professionals do well to be coached or advised themselves. You know, like have themselves in the position of client so that they can know what that feels like. Whether you want to actually wear the hat of advisor, planner, you know, therapist, whatever, it's just good to have that information or at least to have that feeling of what your client may be going through. And I wonder what your thoughts are on that, having a professional, whether you have a formal, you know, CFP as your advisor or some other type of professional, just so you can know what it's like to be a client and have better bedside manner, if anything.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I remember several years ago, like being at an FPA conference and the thought that, or the theme kind of came back of, if you're a financial planner, do you have your own financial planner? And I thought that was really intriguing. In fact, I went out and hired my own financial planner after that because I thought, yes, we are blind to our own weaknesses or our own insecurities, and we like to hide those and cover them up. And yet we need someone to be pointing a spotlight on those and helping us work through those weaknesses as well, not just putting them under the carpet. I would say in my class, I do an exercise every semester with my students, and some of them groan about it and hate it, but it's a spending plan. And now I am talking about cash flow, so I use the word spending plan instead of budget. And most planners, so I work with master's level, most of them are already out in the profession. Some of them are CFPs, have been doing this for years, and they look at me and go, oh, seriously? You're going to make me be a nickel and dime counter accountant for a whole month, and I have to track my own expenses, and I make them do their own. It's not fictitious. And it is really hard to get them engaged in the beginning. But I have them do that over the course of 1 month. If it was ideal, I'd have them do it for 3 months. But ideally, I do it over a course of a month, and then they write a paper on the end talking about that experience. And that's what I grade them on, is what was that like for you? Because I just put them in the shoes of a client. And so many of them have never sat on the other side of the desk. Many of them, by the way, have never done what the things they're telling their own clients to do. In fact, it's kind of funny sometimes because I get so many financial planners that are like, I don't do this. Like, I tell my clients to do it, but I don't do it myself. Are you kidding me? And so it's just been really eye-opening. And they're able not just to change their spending, but they see behaviors. And most importantly, they communicate. So they're in a spouse or a partnership or a marriage, whatever they may be in, they start to communicate with that partner and spouse and say, oh, I didn't know this. Often a financial planner, we're the ones handling all the money issues, and we never give our partner or spouse the opportunity to be a part of those conversations.
No, I think you're saying a lot of things that I think are really key for aspiring financial professionals, career changers to realize. And the theme here to me is this investment in yourself. Not from just the professional education point. I think that's almost table stakes. But when you start thinking about the interaction you're going to have with your clients, the type of conversations you're going to have, the type of transformation you would like for them to have and own in captain, right? Even as a CFP, you know, I am the advice giver, but a lot of times I want to ask them, so what do you think about that? You know, these are not people that are dumb. You know, they have high aptitude. I want them totally engaged in this process. And not just bought in, but actually owning the process. And so a lot of what you're saying, I think this investment in self, realizing what your clients go through, putting yourself through that will all just make you a better financial professional altogether. So I love that. I love that.
One of the areas too that I think gets under discussed is financial therapy. And I don't want to leave without discussing this one because it's so important. So we've talked about idea of cash flow, and when really on the financial planning side, you've assumed people are flush with it. Over the course of years, I've had some financial planners come to me and say, Mary, I'm at my wit's end with a client XYZ, right? And if they can come to you and get help or any financial therapist, this is their last before I fire them as a client, because they are spending more than they're making. And so we're not just talking about people who are on welfare or people who are maybe trying to have a hard time in the middle class paying their bills. We're talking about people that make over $500,000 a year or more. And yet there is so much discord and dissidence and other things going on. We're also talking about sudden millionaires, people who have received an inheritance and have millions and millions of dollars. They're outspending those assets faster than they can do it. So through those, many financial planners are thinking, okay, if I just tell them how to do it, it's going to work out and they're going to listen and it's going to be fine. And when it doesn't change and the behavior continues, they really struggle with that. And that's where financial therapy really comes into place. So being careful, Brad Klontz is well known in that side of the world. And we just actually interviewed him for the podcast earlier this week. And he said, I want you to know that you cannot diagnose as a financial counselor, a financial planner, or a financial coach. You need to be a licensed therapist to do that, even as a financial therapist. So for me, coming from the financial side, I can help in that way, but I cannot diagnose. That is really, a diagnosis is really up to a therapist, someone who has been trained and understands those concepts to help with. So I worked in an EAP for the government for several years. I was the only financial person on staff, and I was surrounded by psychologists and social or substance abuse counselors as well. And so these, we would have different issues come through with different government workers that had top secret security clearances. And in the case of military, they would lose their jobs if their finances were out of order. But so often, it's not just the finances that's the problem, right? There's marital discord or there's something else driving that behavior. And so it's a multi-layered approach. And I worked often with other psychologists that helped me unpeel that onion and get layer after layer after layer to really the underlying issues. So, you know, when it was hoarding, I could only get someone who was hoarding to a certain point. And then I needed the skill set of a trained therapist to continue to work with them. I had anger management. So I had to have a therapist help people with anger management skills or psychosis or other kinds of depression. I mean, there were so many other issues that would come up. And so I needed to be real careful and stay in my lane as a financial expert and refer out for all of the other things. We often would have people come in for prescription drug. We didn't see so much drug abuse in this government top secret kind of world, but we did see a lot of prescription drugs. We saw a lot of substance abuse like alcohol. And what I often, when they would come in, we would call it a trifecta, meaning they needed help on the substance abuse side. They had financial problems. And there was some mental health or marital issues, or usually all of the above in those cases. And so we would kind of have to go back and say, what's the most important issue? And often it would be the abuse or the addiction, I should say more appropriate, had to take place first before I could even get to the finances.
People have always said that personal finance is so much more personal than finance, right? There's so much things that, you know, intersect and interweave when it comes to our money and our money stories, as you're kind of alluding to, too. So I love that you're bringing out the fact that, yes, this is a legitimate thing that you need to be educated and trained to do. And if not, stay in your lane and partner with someone that is so that you don't do more harm than good.
Absolutely. And I think we're used to that as financial planners. We have accountants. We work with estate planning lawyers, all the rest. But we do not touch the therapy side. Yeah. It's hard to find a financial planner that has a mental health therapist and a couples therapist in their Rolodex, right? Yeah.
You're right. I want to pivot though to jobs. It's a common thing with career changers that are like, all right, I'm already gonna have to have the pay cut. I'm already gonna have to, you know, switch gears and start from scratch aside from my transferable skills and things of that nature. I wonder if, you know, if you have some insight or perspective, Mary, on, at least from my purview, it just seems like there's a lot of hang your own shingle, tell your own debt story, yada, yada, yada type of thing when it comes to, let's call it the unregulated portion of financial services with some of the things that we've talked about on the, you know, counseling or coaching side versus finding an opportunity with a company, plugging in. I'll mention Zyders because I know that's one that I've heard of before, but maybe you know of some others or some other ideas for others, for career changers to use when they're going down that path.
Yeah, I'll actually start with a great resource, and that is the AFCPE website under the jobs section. I'll send you the link and make sure we include it in the show notes. But they have broken out all the various ways that a financial counselor or coach could find a career in this section. And they break it up by industry. So banking and credit unions and EAPs. And there is a plethora of jobs out there, but you just don't know until what you don't know, right? And there isn't a clear cut track. So in this, as you mentioned, the unregulated side of things, which by the way, we need to be careful. Just because you're not unregulated doesn't mean you're able to just go out and spew it. I think it's a matter of time before this becomes regulated and in that world, but there's gonna have to be firmer definitions and lanes that we're in before that happens. But in the long and short of it, it's really important that you know, going back to that education side, you know exactly what you can and cannot do, and that you find a job that fits within that and that really accentuates your personality, your perspective, and your passion, really, at the end of the day. Who do you want to work with? And I will tell you, and from my own experience, I got into this profession thinking, I love this. I want to do education. I left graduate school at Texas Tech and moved to Washington, D.C. and started pounding on senators and representatives' doors saying, the world needs financial education, because it just was something that just came alive in me that so many people needed this. By the way, that was not a great job trajectory. There was a lot of no's in that. But long and short of, I've had an interesting and very windy career path, but I have loved that experience that I've gained. And so if you're wanting to get into this, there are more direct routes to take. But if you're more of that entrepreneur and really in that, have that passion, want to move, pretty much plan on creating your own way, because it is still much, very much the wild, wild west. And we have not by any means hit or exceeded our capacity. In fact, we need creative ideas. We need to serve individuals and communities that are receiving nothing right now. And so if you are passionate about a certain community, or there's a group, or even who do you want to work with? That is my suggestion back to your audience, is where does your passion lie? Why do you want to get up every morning? Because I went the traditional route. I did take the CFP. I decided I had to quit my government relations job because I wasn't going to get the work experience. So I just went to work for some financial planning firms. And at the end of the day, I hated it. I remember sitting there on April 16th. It was the day after tax day in a financial planning firm. And I was miserable. And then I saw the predecessor to Ziders was MHN. And it came across and said, go teach personal finance to Europe, to military members. And I was like, that's mine. I want to do it. It got me excited. And yeah, my career is a different area. But that was where my passion came from, teaching and working with military and doing. And I knew nothing about the military, by the way. But it has just been such a blessing in my life to get there. And so that's where I say, go explore, and don't let the unexplored areas stop you or say, well, no one's ever done this before. Well, guess what? We need to be doing that, because everyone, and not just when I say everyone, I'm not just talking about US, I'm talking about globally. Everyone in the world needs this knowledge that we are gaining for ourselves, whether they're in poverty, whether they're wealthy, everyone in between. And how we could better ourselves and really help that self-reliance and helping them feel good about themselves. That's what we need. And we need you, because Dominique, you can touch a community that I would never get through to, and vice versa. And I could too. It's that blue ocean idea of, we're not lobsters in a bucket tearing each other down. Instead, there's so many opportunities that we're here to help one another. Yeah. And if there's something you're passionate about, go do it, because we need your voice.
That sounds so much like I say, everybody, the reason why I love what I'm doing and what I'm trying to do on not just my in my firm, but also through Jumpstart, is that I believe truly that everybody deserves the opportunity to change their family tree, which great financial advice can do. And so knowing I'm finite, there's only so much of me that can go around from a scale standpoint. We've got to get more great people inside of this profession, to your point. I wonder though, could you, as we bring this thing for a landing, what is your, in your opinion, because you sit in a very unique seat, having all your credentials, looking at your story, looking at who you've served, the different populations, you have a very unique perspective. What would you say are maybe some top attributes or qualities for, and I'm going to use this term, financial professionals to possess, whether they want to go on the coaching side or therapy or whatever? I would imagine there are some, obviously some personality type stuff that goes there, but just overarching kind of macro things that you would include in that.
So as I'm thinking through this, I see a bunch of concentric circles in my head. And the one overlapping feature of all four areas that I talked about today is a passion to help others. And to me, if you are passionate about helping other people and wanting to help and serve whomever, whatever that population may be, then you're in the right area, because this is a serving profession. And if you love to help others, no matter which branch you go, counseling, coaching, therapy, planning, whatever that you call yourself, if you were here to help others, that is the one most important attribute to have. And it will serve you well, no matter what direction life takes you.
No, that's beautiful. I love that. That's a soundbite. This is a serving profession. I'm like, financial services, break that word down. Serve is right in the middle of it. So I love that. I love that.
I think it really depends from there on after. I would say it really depends on the route you're going, how you want to work with the individuals, even how you want to get paid. Do you want to work for a company? Do you want to work for yourself? One thing I often get asked as an entrepreneur is, hey, I want to start my own business. It sounds really, really great, right? Until you do it. And then when you do it, you realize, oh, not only am I the boss.
It's a different skill set, right? It's different than knowing finances or whatnot in and out than, you know, being, you know, every position that a business can have for, you know, however long it takes you to hire your first person.
And so know yourself enough to know, I value stability. I value community. I value collective energy, because you're probably not going to get that as an entrepreneur. If you do, then you're going to really have to work hard at it, right?
Yeah.
And so with that, I think you need to know, hey, I am a risk taker. I am willing to really jump off. I feel so passionate about this. I'm going to create a new path. And if you're not that person, that's okay. I kind of feel like it's the introvert extrovert. Remember the book Quiet that came out a few years ago of how our society as a whole really values extroverts and we overlook introverts. Well, guess what? We really value rainmakers in this industry. Mm-hmm. We really value people that can talk and are exciting and can be up on video. But what do we really need behind the scenes? We need people helping us along. Dominique, you even mentioned that without your assistant today, it's hard. Yeah. You need helpers, and you don't just need someone to help you. You need qualified and really good help. And that's where I say, if you have a different personality and you don't want to be a rainmaker, don't leave this profession. Mm. We need you. It just may be that you're not in the right fit, that you don't want to go through it. And this is going to date me, but a phone book and start making cold calls or whatever, a computer nowadays and making phone calls.
Yeah.
And if that is not your thing, that's okay. That does not mean that you don't love financial planning and want to serve.
Yeah.
So find your niche. Maybe it's in a back office position. Maybe it's on an education side. Maybe it's doing something completely different that you haven't even thought of. I've seen quite a few entrepreneurs that have started their own back office groups, right? That help planners with it, that they don't have to be client facing. So I think the other thing I would say too is don't be fearful of thinking, oh, I'm not a financial planner because I don't do X, Y, and Z. Don't let anyone dictate to you if you call yourself a financial planner or not. I think that is what I've heard so often. I've heard people students especially come back to me and say, well, I'm not great at investments and I really don't have a drive for it. So I better go into a different profession. And I'm like, stop. That is not the right answer. You know, come back and help people wherever you're at.
Yeah.
So if you really love helping people with debt and credit, guess what? We need many, many more of you. Even more than probably on the investment side, because there's so many that need that help.
Yeah.
So just take whatever your strengths and capitalize on those and let the other stuff wash by. There's no one out there regulating the term financial planner or financial counselor, call yourself whatever. But at the end of the day, how you serve your clients and that you make a difference in this profession, that's what I care about, is that there's more of us out there serving and helping in whatever unique way we can.
Wow, I love that. I should have asked my parting question. I know you got more in the tank, though, so I'll ask it anyway. Since this is a podcast to empower tomorrow's financial professional with tools to serve their client at the next level, what word or words of wisdom would you leave with our audience today?
I would say, in terms of serving, it's that ability to really listen and hear. And I think that that doesn't come, especially for those of us that are a little extroverted and love to talk and love to see others, and in a financial planning setting where we are expected to know all of the answers. You know, we get that technical knowledge and we're really sharp at it. But at the end of the day, if you're not a good listener, if you can't hear what the client's really trying to tell you, it doesn't matter how much you know up here. I think it's Maya Angelou that says it, and I'm going to botch it up, but essentially it's you, a person never knows how much you love them until they know how you feel. So it's essentially how much they feel from you. How do you make them feel is more important than all of the stuff you've got going on here.
I'll piggyback that with Zig Ziglar, who said that it's people don't care about how much you know until they know about how much you care.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Well, we are out of time. I wish I could keep it going here. You have a resource that I want to definitely link down in the show notes. We didn't get to talk about it, but it's a free guide. Maybe give us a quick blurb about what that is so people can check it out.
Yeah, I think this is especially helpful for those that are just coming into the profession and maybe don't know anything about planning. It's a free resource and guide to questions to ask a financial planner. And so if you don't even know what a financial planner is, go out, take this questionnaire, go interview some financial planners, maybe not just for yourself, but could this be a potential career opportunity? And I think with those resources, you're going to learn so much with those questions, because so often people just need to know, what do I ask somebody? How do I get started? And the more you talk about it, the more you hear about it, the more you understand people's experiences, the more your ideas will solidify and you'll hopefully find really what you're looking for.
That's great. Dr. Mary Carlson, so glad that you were able to spend this time and impart into the Jumpstart community, into the aspiring financial professionals of the future. I like to call them the next gen. So appreciate you so much for spending time with us today.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me. What a pleasure.
Right. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Hey there. I really hope you enjoyed this conversation. Before we go, just a few things. The best way to retain what you just learned is to do more than just listen. First, you need to write down your most important takeaway, and then you need to give yourself a deadline to apply it. For bonus points, you might also let someone hold you accountable to that deadline. Also, remember, the only way more people will know about this podcast is if you share it. You can do that by sharing a link to this episode on your social media or by leaving a review on iTunes so that it reaches a wider audience. I'd appreciate if you took the time to do either or both. And finally, if you'd like to join my free community to learn more about how you can become a next generation financial professional, please text me at 214-544-9226. I love to hear from you and point you in the right direction. Bye for now, until our next conversation.